You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, let's go around the NBA real quick. Top NBA stories. Lakers, by the way, taking on the Philadelphia 76ers tomorrow. Best team in the Eastern Conference versus the best team in the Western Conference. Looking forward to that. All right, some of the other NBA stories. So already some NBA trade rumors. Shams Charania of the Athletic putting out on Twitter. Pelicans getting calls on Lonzo Ball and J.J. Redick. And they're open to trade talk. You know, we have obviously got a chance to watch Lonzo Ball early in his career. I'm a fan of Lonzo. I mean, I don't know if bad rap is the right way to describe Lonzo, but he came to the Lakers. Expectations were unrealistic. And really, what is he in the NBA? He's a player that cannot shoot, does not have a polished offensive game. His game actually seems less polished offensively than it did when he was at UCLA. He's a fantastic passer. He's incredibly unselfish. He likes playing defense. I mean, there are characteristics that you like about the kid. But if with the Lakers and with the Pelicans, things don't work out, you know, early in his career, trying to think, what would be a good fit for Lonzo Ball? I mean, how can he be around in this league for 10, 12, 15 years and excel and thrive, not just be in the league and kind of bounce around from team to team? I don't have that answer, but I will tell you what I think would be exciting. What if Lonzo ended up with Charlotte to play with his brother? I'm watching Lonzo Ball and his brother LaMelo Ball play basketball together. I mean, wasn't that always the vision of LaVar Ball? And I'm not saying you do it just for that, but I think it would be exciting to see these two play together. And I go back to this with Lonzo. I know he's got holes in his game, but he also has characteristics that I really truly feel are strengths. There are not too many players in the NBA that want to pass the ball, A, and B, want to play defense. He does both of those things. And as his career progresses, hopefully he gets better at it. But I thought that was interesting from Shams to put that out there. Another player that's looking to, at least there's some rumors about, I mentioned J.J. Redick. Redick needs to end up with a contender. That's where J.J. Redick needs to end up. He needs to end up, if he's going to get traded, he's going to end up with a contender that needs a shooter. J.J. Redick's got to be on a team where there's so much attention on the stars that all he's got to do is do what he's done best his entire career, be a sniper out there, and shoot threes. So trade rumors already started. Another trade rumor I heard today. This is also from Shams Charania of The Athletic. The Clippers and Knicks are interested in Derrick Rose. So he's in his 13th season in the NBA. By the way, we know Derrick Rose can get you. That's a walk-in bucket. So whatever Derrick Rose is doing, you get him the ball. He finds a way to put the ball in the basket. He's averaging about 13 points a game in Detroit this year. I don't know. That doesn't sound like a good fit for the doesn't sound like that good of a fit for the Clippers, to be honest with you. Isn't that kind of what Lou Williams is? We'll see wherever he ends up or wherever he goes, but it'd be nice to see if Derrick Rose can end up on a playoff team and have a deep run and have a chance to compete for an NBA championship. The other name that I heard today is that the Warriors and Pelicans talked about a potential trade for Kelly Oubre Jr. So Oubre, this is his first season with the Warriors. I thought I read some stat where in 16 games, he had 16 assists total. Something along those lines. By the way, maybe that's even way too high. Maybe I'm off on that. But the point was showing that Kelly Oubre, for as many minutes as he plays, is not really a distributor or much anything along those lines. So we'll see what happens with those players. Lonzo Ball, J.J. Redick, Derrick Rose, and Kelly Oubre Jr. I know I'm not naming off James Harden and some of these other big-time players, but the NBA trade rumors have already started. Okay, did you guys see the story about Caris LeVert? So Caris LeVert is a part of the Indiana Pacers right now. How about this story? Take a listen to this. So Caris LeVert was part of that blockbuster trade that saw James Harden end up with the Brooklyn Nets. Caris LeVert was with Brooklyn. I think he got traded. Originally was to Houston. Then Houston shipped him out to Indiana. It was something along those lines. But he's with the Indiana Pacers. So part of your regular protocol is you undergo a physical to make sure you get cleared by the other team. Okay, there's no injuries. We're all good. Yep, the trade is official. In that physical, Caris LeVert was a part of, it ultimately diagnosed him. They found out that he had kidney cancer. I read the story today that he had surgery today. It was a success, and he will not need further treatment. He is out indefinitely, but how about that story? How about that timing that trade goes down? Caris LeVert gets a physical that maybe he would not have gotten. And, thankfully, he's good. He's going to be okay. He does not need further treatment, but that's what they diagnosed him with after that. So they found out, obviously, with further tests and so forth. I just thought that was an incredible story. I mean, so much of the time we're talking X's and O's and what does this player have to do and is that player going to get traded? That was a real-life story, and that's certainly a great story to hear that he's okay and he's doing well. So, Laker fans, do you want to see an NBA All-Star game? Michael Thompson and I in the pregame show yesterday were debating this. By the way, if you want to chime in on that, 877-710-ESPN. So the Players Union is discussing a possible All-Star game in early March. So for those that are keeping an eye out on the schedule, only the first 37 games were released for the Lakers, for most of the teams. I don't know if they're all 37, but 37 games. So the season right now, based on the schedule, goes through March 4th. After March 4th, we know there's a break from March 5th to the 10th. Before the second half of the season, the Lakers will play the remainder of their games and all these other teams. There's a few reasons why they're doing that. COVID-19 is certainly affected, and they were expecting COVID-19 to affect the regular season schedule. This gives them a chance to make up ground, make up some of those games that they missed. So yesterday I'm reading this report that they're going to have an NBA All-Star break, but they weren't going to have an NBA All-Star game. And now there's conversation that Atlanta would be the location. It would be on Sunday, March 7th, potentially. I don't know about you guys. I kind of enjoyed last year's game. Michael was saying, well, why are they going to do an All-Star game? You know, usually this is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's great festivities. There's great events. There's parties. There's the three-point challenge, there's the slam dunk contest, there's all these other events, and the NBA wouldn't do any of that. They would just do an all-star game. I was telling Michael, I'm like, yeah, but, we're playing games without fans anyways. Why would we do it? We would do it because we get to see the best in the NBA go up against each other. And then Michael said, which is obviously a great point, that, well, Al, there's no competition in these all-star games. Nobody cares to be there to begin with. I thought last season was the first time in really a long time I was on the edge of my seat watching an NBA All-Star game. So if you guys remember this, I'm reading this off the internet. So I know this is going to sound robotic, but I got to explain exactly because I had to go back and look to see exactly what the rules were last All-Star game. To win the NBA All-Star game, the team with 100 points would need to score 24 points in the fourth quarter before the team with 95 points scores 29 points. So the idea there is if you're down 5, then you got to score 29. The team in the lead, they just got to score 24. And it was an exciting game. There was no running clock. It was competitive. There were teams actually playing defense. I love the draft they do. Team Giannis versus Team LeBron. I love all that. So I think if that structure is still there, I think it still can be competitive. And I am not one of those to say, well, because there's no fans, we shouldn't do it. I mean, we've been playing for almost a year now without fans. And all the sports have done it. And we've all, certainly as best as we can, adjusted and enjoyed the product that's out there. So NBA All-Star Game, I'm in for that one. I'm in for that one. I'll have to argue Michael more tomorrow in the pregame show. Okay, last thing I want to get into, the latest on COVID-19 around the NBA. 22 total NBA games have been postponed. You know, this is the legitimate question I have. I have no idea how they're going to make up these games. Maybe they already got their plan. Obviously, maybe 22 games isn't all that much. I know a team like Memphis, they have missed their fifth straight game. Tomorrow will be their fifth straight game versus the Bulls. So there's certain teams incredibly affected by it, knock on wood. The Lakers, not so much, at least as far as postponements go. So we'll keep an eye on that. Okay, when we come back, I want to play some more old Kobe highlights and look back at some of these memories with Kobe Bryant. There's actually a great, great clip from today. Shaq was on with Stephen A. Smith, and Shaq is basically talking about this is the greatest 1-2 punch ever. When we come back, we'll spend some time on it. 877-710-ESPN. If you got a Kobe story that you want to share or some of your favorite memories of the 20 years of Kobe Bryant rocking the purple and gold, shoot us a call at 877-710-ESPN. This is Lakers Talk. I'm Alan Sliwa on 710-ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Coming out of the timeout to the chance of the ever-familiar Beat LA. 1 second remaining in the regular season, possibly. Out to Kobe. Fall away high.
Again.
What a way to finish! Again. Are you kidding me?
Are you? That's the way to end the regular season, Jeff. That's the way you end it. Kobe put it in the first overtime with a miracle three. Wins it in the second overtime with... was it a miracle three? This one, not nearly as difficult as the last one. They will review it, but from this vantage point, it looked like the ball was definitely gone before the clock expired. Peyton to Kobe to the basket, definitely counts. No question about it. No question about it. Number eight, you might let her this year.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Speechless sometimes. Honestly, speechless. I listened to that call. I was grabbing some of these clips last night, and I listened back on that call, and I listened to it from the home crowd, obviously Stu Lance right there, and then I listened to it from, for the road crowd, and then I listened to it to the home audience, so the Portland Trailblazers broadcasters. I mean, it's literally sheer silence for 50 seconds. It's Kobe hitting the buzzer beater over Theo Ratliff, and then just sheer silence from the broadcasters for 45 or 50 seconds. Got to be honest with you, that's one of my all-time favorite highlights. If you guys remember that, that was for the Lakers to win the Pacific Division Championship. Do you guys remember this? Do you guys remember Ruben Patterson, the so-called Kobe stopper? And to get the game to overtime, you know what was on the line? This was the final game of the regular season. And it was the Pacific Division, a chance to win the Pacific Division. And literally, like as I kind of mention all this and I go through all these different highlights, Kobe sends a game into overtime, and then the final shot, Lakers, I want to say we're down two, and he hits that three. And that's ball game. Lakers win the division, and that's one of my favorite highlights, kind of looking back at Kobe. And I know we got a ton of those. All right, 877-710-ESPN. If you guys want to give your thoughts on any Laker memories that you have, 18-time All-Star, 5-time NBA champion, 15-time All-NBA. How about 12-time All-Defensive Team? 2-time Finals MVP. We all got a ton of memories when it comes to Kobe Bryant. Okay, so you guys actually heard right there, as we were coming back in, I wanted to... hit on something real quick. Max Kellerman, by the way, coming up at 8:30. So one of the things that kind of stands out for me is what LeBron James is doing right now. And, you know, I don't think this is a surprise to anybody or anything like that, but what LeBron is doing right now is truly, truly, truly special. And one of the things that... you just kind of watch a player like LeBron James and you stop kind of appreciating what he does on a night in, night out basis because he's doing it all the time. I mean, he literally is doing it all the time. So when I'm doing the post game show and I say LeBron 27 points tonight, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, and let's go on and see what Alex Caruso did. Like, think about how quick I turn the page sometimes on LBJ. Last night was a great combination of seeing LeBron James not just do his regular almost triple-double, but it was LeBron going off on the offensive end. Earlier in the show, we were talking about this. We were saying that there are certain players that are just must-watch. You got a couple people, including LZ Granderson, that explained a story that talked about how they missed Kobe's last game. They didn't watch it, or they didn't go to the game. LZ talked about how he didn't go to the game. There are certain players that are just must-watch, and you just never know. Anything can happen at any time. LeBron had a little bit of that last night. I really do feel that. I mean, LeBron had a fadeaway at the baseline. I don't know, 19 feet out. The double team is coming. LeBron had one of those moments last night where you got to be really smart watching LeBron at this stage of his career, because if you do not watch him, he can drop 46 on a night, and we already know that what he's doing on a kind of a day-to-day basis with his nearly triple doubles every single night is we should be appreciating those in the process as well. I just read this, too, by the way, when I was doing the show. The late Los Angeles Lakers LeBron James now MVP favorite at some sports books. Am I missing something on the MVP front? I mean, am I just an idiot out here that does not understand how anyone else would be the most valuable player in the NBA other than LeBron James? What am I missing? What am I missing? Because I genuinely don't understand how this could be a conversation right now in the league. You got the best record in the NBA. You're 10-0 on the road. Your stats are as good as they were last year. What am I missing? We just watched the Lakers play against the Milwaukee Bucks. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, those are big holes, glaring holes that he has. You're going to tell me that's the most valuable player in the NBA? I don't understand those who have an argument against LeBron James, but what I will say is the Westgate Vegas Sportsbook are putting LeBron as the favorite, 4-1 odds. This was done on Monday night after the 36-year-old rallied the Lakers to a comeback. So I guess it took LeBron to drop 46 for people to start changing their odds. I don't know who's second on this list, by the way. Second favorite is Luka Doncic. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go with LeBron is definitely the favorite. Okay, a great clip from earlier today. Shaquille O'Neal with Stephen A. Smith. This is their conversation. Actually, Steve, have I got enough time for this? Should I play it after Kelman? Let's do this. When we come back, because I want to make sure we give as much time as possible for Max Kellerman. I don't want to cut anything short. He's coming up here in the next few minutes. Let's do Max Kellerman when we come back. And before we get out of here, I will spend some time with this Stephen A. clip with Shaquille O'Neal, where Shaq is just basically saying that's the baddest combination of two players that you can have on a team. Obviously talking about Shaq and Kobe. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, welcome back to Lakers Talk. Want to welcome in one of my favorite guys to watch, and you know, certainly respect the work that he did, not just when he was in L.A., but now obviously doing it on a national level. Max Kellerman on 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. right here in Los Angeles, Monday through Friday. Max, thanks for taking some time. How are you doing?
Doing good, man. You know, it's hard to imagine that it's been a year since Kobe's passing, but you know, other than that, today, doing well.
Well, I tell you what, and this is one of the main reasons why I wanted to have you on. What I'm trying to do in you know tonight's show is really just kind of talk about some of the great memories that we have of Kobe Bryant and his impact and his legacy on the game, on the court, off the court. Max, what was some of your interaction with Kobe? Did you have a personal relationship with him? I know for the years that you were out here in Los Angeles, I'm just curious to know what that relationship was.
Well, it's hard to say personal because we exchanged information and stories about our families and stuff like that. So I guess it is personal, but it was always in the context of, you know, what was going on with the Lakers, with him. Mm-hmm. And so it was a professional relationship, but I guess there was a personal dimension to it. You know, I've told the story today on the radio on the Max Kellerman show, of course, here on ESPN LA, 11 a.m. weekdays. I told a story on the show earlier today about how, like, I was going through old texts the day it happened, just kind of going over, you know, you want to try and convince yourself it didn't really happen, but you also want a little piece of the person that maybe you forgot about. So I was going through old text exchanges, and one of them, I saw Kobe was talking about, like, what movie they're going to watch, and I'll pick up the popcorn on the way home, something like that. And I realized that I must have been the last person he texted, and I think it was that. And it was just about family. You know, they're going to have family movie night, like a lot of us do with our families. And he was such a family guy. And when anything that if you said hello to Kobe, he started telling you stories, especially about Gianna. That was my impression of Kobe. The first thought was, this guy is a family guy. He loves his family. And the next thought I always had about Kobe is he was really intellectually curious. He was a really bright guy. And I don't just mean, like, for an athlete, he's smart. No, he was just a really bright guy. But certainly among the athletes I dealt with, I enjoyed talking to him. He may be at the top of the list because he's really just, like, I don't know what his IQ was, but I imagine it was extremely high. I remember one conversation we had, because he used to like to pick my brain about different things, including boxing. He always tried to apply it to basketball at that point in his career. And I remember at one point saying, Kobe, like, when you're done, you should think about academia, you know, like going back to school. And he's like, get out of here, this and that. But he would have really thrived, you know, going right from high school to the NBA. He got a worldly education, but he would have thrived at a university somewhere. He was really, really smart.
Max Kellerman taking some time to join Lakers Talk. Max, you obviously, your entire career, and I know you're a historian when it comes to sports, you've watched athletes. You've seen some of the greatest at their craft. What do you respect most about Kobe? And what kind of stood out to you? 20 years he played for the Los Angeles Lakers, and we know some of the ups, the downs, and I'm referring to championships with Shaquille O'Neal, and then some of the days where the Lakers certainly struggled. Pau Gasol comes along, Lakers win two more. What did you respect about his game most?
The respect for it is the following, like Mamba mentality. A lot of people don't really understand what that means. Like Floyd Mayweather, a lot of fighters looked at him and thought, oh, the money Mayweather, and I'll flash money, and I'll talk a lot of smack, and I'll box in a certain style, when what they didn't see was the work that Floyd put in to get to be there, right? Mm-hmm. Mamba mentality is not just about, boy, have killer instinct. Be the hero at the end of the game and take the last shot and don't be scared. It was that. But I told this story a couple times today also. I remember an old boxing trainer, and I'm trying to remember who it was, but he talked about how Evander Holyfield would have beaten Mike Tyson, you know, 100 times out of 100, because, and he kissed his arms. He loved himself, right? He loved himself. And I often think in sports, guys who come through, the athletes who come through, no one's infallible, but more often than not in the clutch, believe they deserve it. To me, Mamba mentality is that. You believe you deserve it in that moment, not because I have killer instinct or you style yourself some hero, but because you put in the work. You deserve it because you put in the work. And I don't just mean the hours in the gym. I mean, you put in the hours, but you did it with intensity. You know, people in their own lives can think about, you know, you go to the gym, you kind of go through the motions, you get a certain result. You go and you work like you mean it. Mike Tyson say, quoting Custom Motto, would say, intensity is doing something you hate, but you love it. And like, it reminds me of like leg day. No one wants to do leg day in the gym, right? But if you're like, okay, you attack it. That's what Mamba mentality was for me, I think, and what Kobe exemplified. You put in the work with intensity, And so in the moment of truth, you know you deserve it. And that's who comes through. That's what. That's really what I admired most about him.
Max Kellerman, yeah. Taking some time to join Lakers Talk here. Always appreciate Max's time. Max, you know, I've told this story a couple times. When Kobe came to the game against the Dallas Mavericks, he obviously came with Gigi. I thought there was such a powerful moment, and I had the opportunity. I was covering that game, and then I was doing the post-game show, and I thought it was such a powerful moment that Kobe was coming in wearing that WNBA sweater, and there he was with his daughter. And I'm curious just to get your thoughts on this. What do you think the impact Kobe has had and will continue to have on women's basketball, the WNBA specifically? Where do you think that legacy goes from here? And I feel like there are a lot of other NBA players trying to embrace what he was trying to do.
Well, I'll say this, and I can tell you from experience, however liberated you think you are, and you know, you hate it when you hear there's some issue involving women, and someone will stand up, you know, some guy will talk about, hey, I have a mother, I have a daughter, I have a sister, and you think, well, do you need that to know how to treat people like people, right? But the fact is, when you have daughters, it changes you. I can talk from personal experience. It becomes, for a man, so personal in a way that it hadn't been before, at least not for me. When you think about the world, and you can think about like basic fairness for people and try to be righteous. But when you have daughters and you see the world that they're going to grow up in, you want to make sure that your daughter grows up in a world that is going to be good to her, you know, and definitely you could see Kobe, and that's why he called himself Girl Dad, right? You could see Kobe how important that was to him. Not that he might not, you know, would have supported the WNBA anyway, but I can tell you as a father of daughters, and he and I used to talk about our daughters a lot. When I would speak to him, that I like, there weren't many conversations where the subject of our daughters didn't come up, and you could see that when Kobe was pro WNBA, that was personal to him.
You know, Max, it kind of comes, I guess you could say, a little bit full circle here, because a day like today, I've got a chance to hear a lot of, you know, Laker fans expressing their stories, their gratitude over the 20 years, maybe their own personal experiences with it. And yeah, back in the days when it was the Max and Marcella show, and you would have, you know, you would share some of these stories, or even like you mentioned today earlier in your show, this is kind of an opportunity to bring some of these up. So I think highlighting obviously some of these really just great moments and great memories, I think that helps for a lot of fans out there and professionals out there that obviously had some type of connection with Kobe, whether they knew him personally or they didn't. So I appreciate you sharing some of those stories. Can I get your thoughts real quick here? So here are the Lakers, 14-4 on the season. What, any surprises for you of how the Lakers are playing? I mean, has anything really kind of jumped out to you? Are they doing exactly what you thought they'd be doing this deep into the season?
Well, they're a top team offensively and defensively, and LeBron James is a guy who, when he got to Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra in Miami, started playing defense with intensity, the intensity I talked about earlier, right? Mamba mentality. Really started playing deep. But I think he realized if he wants to play full seasons and make championship runs every single season, which he has, he's going to have to preserve himself, and that means you got to take your foot off the gas on defense sometimes in order that it's there, that the gas is there in high leverage moments to play defense, which he would do. He preserved himself in the regular season. We saw it through the years post Miami. And then he would have it there when he needed it in the playoffs defensively. AD came on First Take last year and talked about how he challenged LeBron to be great defensively, you know, and I think it really paid off. LeBron has played with the Lakers, has led by example on defense. Now, given his age, the number of miles, the responsibility on offense, it's not going to be playing defense, you know, like he's Dennis Rodman all the time. But the defensive intensity that LeBron has shown as a Laker, to me, is different than the one he showed in Cleveland. He's really doing it and helping set an example. And when you look at the Lakers defensively, they're at least as good as they are offensively. And that's what's jumped out to me this year. I think they're better in that respect, and they were last year, and they were quite good last year.
Max, final one. Is there a team out there, or what team stands out to you that can give the Lakers the biggest, would be the biggest threat in a seven-game set? Is it a team here in the West, team in the East? Who do you think would present the most problems?
I actually think if they remain healthy and get on a roll in the Western Conference, it's going to be Dallas. I think they're flying under the radar. But Porzingis has played well since he got back. And people don't understand, that dude was on his way to becoming an MVP-caliber player when he got hurt in New York. A defensive game changer, and offensively impossibly 7'3". He's 2 inches taller than Kareem and can take you take a big off the dribble and bomb the three, right? And then Luka, obviously. But they also have a lot of size. I remember when the Lakers went back-to-back, Dallas eventually beat them. And I remember looking at the average height of their bigs, right? The Lakers had a big advantage because they had bigs who could play who were tall. Powell and Odom and obviously Andrew Bynum. And Dallas got them there. They had their best players. Obviously, Dirk was 7 feet, but they had seven-footers who could play. When I look at Dallas, I look at Porzingis, but also like Dorian Finney-Smith is 6'7", 6'8", and can really 3 and D. Maxi Kleber is 6'10", and can 3 and D. And then obviously in the backcourt, Luka and Tim Hardaway Jr., they could create some problems. I don't like anyone to beat the Lakers in a seven-game series, but I think if Dallas gets rolling, and for example, until Porzingis got hurt and he got unfairly fouled out of one game, I picked the Clippers last year to go all the way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they would have gotten out of the first round with Dallas had Porzingis been healthy. So I think they were better. So I think they present the challenge in the West. And in the East, the Nets, because they have a big three and no one else does. They have KD, Harden, and Kyrie. And it's not just a big three in name. You have two MVP-caliber players and an All-Star plus. And the thing about them is all three guys can get their shot whenever they want and can score at all three levels, at every level. They can bomb from three. They can hit the mid-range. I mean, Harden doesn't take them, but he could. But you think he could hit them if he did. And obviously Kyrie and KD can. They can score in the paint, and they can shoot free throws. All at elite, elite levels. And so when your three best players can all do that, and none of them are even the best shooter on the team, Joe Harris is the best shooter on that team. And he's not just a shooter. I think that once they figure it out, they are, you know, offensively, they're going to be impossible. Impossible. But defensively, the Lakers have an advantage, so I like them against the Nets, too.
Max Kellerman, Monday through Friday, right here in L.A., 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Max, really, really appreciate your time, your insight, and it's great catching up as always. So thank you for doing this.
Great to talk to you, brother.
All right, that's Max Kellerman right there. Remember the Max and Marcellus days, too? How good was that? I think I was a groupie on that show. I mean, I loved that show. Anytime they were on together, it was amazing. And Max making it happen now on his own Monday through Friday, like I mentioned, right here on ESPN LA, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Was a little surprised, actually. He went with the Dallas Mavericks as the team that he thought can present the most problems to the Lakers if Porzingis is healthy. I think I'm still one that's definitely thinking if there is a team to challenge the Lakers in the West, it's got to be the Clippers, right? I mean, I think they got to prove it in the playoffs. They've never even got to the Western Conference Finals, so it's kind of tough to make that argument, but they are playing good basketball. They lost today to the Atlanta Hawks, but we know Kawhi Leonard and Paul George did not play because of the COVID-19 protocols, the health and safety protocols because of COVID-19. Okay, so I was starting to promote it, and then I wanted to go to Max first. When we come back, you got to listen to this. Shaq on with Stephen A. Smith earlier today, talking about the Shaq and Kobe combination. Was that the greatest 1-2 punch in NBA history? You'll have to hear Shaq kind of give his opinion and his thoughts on it. We'll do that next. Stay right here. Lakers, by the way, taking on Philly tomorrow, so we'll also preview that. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, thank you for being a part of the show. By the way, right when we're done with this, we'll do about a half hour or so on all our social media platforms. So it'll be Lakers Talk. Watch the video. It will be on Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, you name it. We'll be on all these platforms. So if you want some more Lakers Talk, you can get it on social. We'll do it right after the show. So Stephen A. Smith has his new show, Stephen A.'s World, had Shaquille O'Neal on earlier today. And, you know, obviously a lot of these networks were doing the best we can to talk about some of the great memories of Kobe Bryant. And Stephen A. was talking to Shaq about their relationship, their bond, and their duo on the floor. Take a listen here how Shaq kind of described his time with Kobe.
You know, we have great memories. I can remember when, he and I did the TNT special, and he talked about when we first met. I didn't remember that. I remember him coming to the locker room, and he was looking for Penny. And, you know, him and Penny, you know, I guess Penny was, you know, too busy for him, whatever. And then he came to me and asked for an autograph and a picture. And I was like, sure, young fella. I didn't even know that. Like, even when we played together, like, he never told me that. But, look, he was a guy that when he came in at 17, 18, he knew he wanted to be the best player in the world. And, you know, we definitely had the big brother, little brother relationship. And people ask me all the time, if we had all over to do again, what would I do different? And the answer is nothing. We definitely pushed each other. And it was able for us to win 3 out of 4. Unfortunately, the business of basketball kicked in. I wanted to do other things. And then he was really able to shine and, you know, take over, you know, make a name for himself. But, again, he's gone too soon. He'll never be forgotten. But I can boastfully say that we are the most enigmatic, controversial, most dominant 1-2 punch, little to big, ever created, and we will never be duplicated. I don't care what you say, and I don't care who you try to compare us to. It'll never be another Kobe and Shaq ever again.
Shaquille O'Neal right there, talking about that relationship with Kobe. I've said this before. If you guys listen often to the show, I said my favorite era of Lakers basketball was Shaq and Kobe. You know, I grew up towards the end of Magic's career. Magic was my favorite player of all time. I just love that style of basketball. I mean, as a kid, I would literally go back. I mean, I didn't have the honor and the privilege of watching Magic when he was in Game 6 in Philadelphia, dropping 42 and 15 with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar not in the game. I wasn't born yet. But I remember, buying videos on the VCR and throwing some of those videos in and just watching Magic. I just loved that style of basketball, the no-look passes, the quarterback on the court. But when Magic retired and, you know, that 90s era when it was Nick Van Exel and Eddie Jones and Eldon Campbell and Cedric Ceballos and some of those players, when that was kind of the Lakers' supposed future, I loved Lakers basketball. I mean, Eddie Jones was one of my favorite players. But then things got serious. 1996, the Lakers get Kobe. Jerry West outmaneuvers the Orlando Magic and gets Shaquille O'Neal. Derek Fisher drafted out of Arkansas, Little Rock, and ends up with the Lakers as well. So you were just kind of starting to put pieces together on this Lakers team. Rick Fox is with the Lakers. Robert Horry, eventually the Lakers trade for him. They trade out Cedric Ceballos. Robert Horry is known for throwing the towel at Danny Ainge, and Phoenix got him out of there. But that era of Kobe and Shaq, the ups, the downs, what'd the Lakers lose? 3 years in a row under Dale Harris. I can't remember, actually, 96 or 97, 98, 99. 3 years under Dale Harris, the Lakers can't win. Then Phil Jackson comes in. By the way, even the losing, even all those losses that the Lakers used to have, against the Utah Jazz, or as a caller called in and said, I knew when Kobe had those 4 air balls, but he had the you-know-what to take those shots in that big moment. As a rookie, I knew he was going to be one of the greats. By the way, it makes sense. Somebody that's incredibly, incredibly fearless, it makes sense. But that Kobe-Shaq era was my favorite. And there's so many great memories in that Kobe-Shaq era. And a lot of people, I think they tend to remember what Shaq was accomplishing. What they might forget, and I'll be the first to help kind of try to remind them, there were many times that Shaquille O'Neal would foul out in a big-time game, and who would come to the rescue? Kobe Bryant. Do you guys remember this? I'm going to play a quick highlight here. So Game 4 2000, Lakers taking on the Indiana Pacers. Shaq fouls out. Lakers are up 2-1 in this series. Kobe, calm, cool, and collect. Everybody calm down. Everything's good. All right, Shaq, I got this. Don't worry. Steve, please play these.
Kobe is going to try to attack. shaking on Miller and hitting a two-point basket. He was just inside the line. The Laker lead is three again.
How about the poise of this young guy? Key matchup we talked about. Look at Reggie Miller squaring him up. These two guys played one-on-one all summer in L.A. Kobe takes it between his leg. He pulls it back, hits the jumper, and then sort of gives it, you know, take your time. Everything's cool. I'm not going to let us lose this game. They've got to get a stop here and give themselves a chance to take the lead. And you know Kobe is going to go to work again.
Here he is over Jackson. How good is this kid?
Kobe Bryant, once again, the ball is going to be in his hands. How much do you miss a guy when you don't have him? You miss him for this right here. Huge jump shot. Three.
Miller hands it inside to Crozier. 14 on the shot clock as the ball was knocked away. Shaw on the dribble. Shot clock at 12. Shaw running one-hander. Followed in by Kobe Bryant.
Again, offensive rebounds.
The Lakers have a 3-1 lead.
So as I look back, and, you know, we spent a lot of the show talking about Kobe memories, and Kobe had times during that Shaq-Kobe era where Shaquille O'Neal, God bless him, I mean, one of the most dominating players this league has ever seen, there were plenty of times where you couldn't go toward, you couldn't go to Shaq in crunch time because he's not going to hit free throws, or he was in foul trouble and he found himself on the sidelines. As an example, that game four that I'm referring to, the Lakers and the Indiana Pacers, those are incredible, incredible Kobe highlights, Kobe memories. You know, one more that I want to leave you guys with here from a Kobe perspective. So in 2013, I want to say it was in 2013. Actually, no, it might have been later. When Kobe tears his Achilles. Okay, so let me just actually, I kind of want to describe what that moment was from a fan perspective, right? So I was trying to kind of understand this. And I remember at the time, Kobe is doing everything he can just to get to the Lakers, just to get the Lakers into the postseason. And tears his Achilles. They're playing the Golden State Warriors. And you see Kobe kind of reach back. He's not sure what happened. He's not 100% sure if he, you know, if he tore his Achilles or not, or whatever the case is. The dude pulls up to the, or walks over first because there's a timeout called. And then walks back on the court to go take two free throws. What are you talking about? What do you mean Kobe Bryant is going to go take those two free throws? What do you mean Kobe Bryant, who just tore his Achilles, is going to walk up to the free throw line? He's going to take two free throws. And then when it's done, Lakers are going to commit a foul, and he's going to walk all the way back to the locker room without any help. I mean, out of all the moments that I kind of has shared throughout the entire show tonight, and we've walked through, and I've had, you know, the honor of listening to other people share their stories, that might be the most impressive memory that I have of Kobe on the basketball floor. It was the time where he tore his Achilles and symbolically decided, yeah, you are not taking me off this floor. I will walk off the floor on my own two feet and nobody's going to help me. Is that not Kobe Bryant? I mean, really, really, I think that's the best way to describe Kobe. Just an absolute warrior for 20 years in the purple and gold. All right, we're coming to a close here on the show. I want to thank Meta World Peace for joining the show. I want to thank Max Kellerman for joining the show. If you missed any part of the show, you could download the full 2 hours on the ESPN app or on iTunes, Lakers Talk with Alan Sliwa. Coming up next, I'll do my social show. Lakers taking on the Philadelphia 76ers tomorrow. Tip-off at 4:30, pregame show at 3 o'clock. LA, thank you for tuning in.